Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
So I'm Paul Rosenwinkel. I'm a third-year student at Luther Seminary, and as a part of my seminary education, I get to go on a year-long internship. And so I was lucky enough to be able to do my internship here at Jacob's Well. So you'll be seeing a lot of me over the next 11 months or so. Thanks. Some information on me. I was raised in Wisconsin. I went to college at St. Olaf, where I met my wife, Addie. Addie, if you want to wave. Thanks. Then graduated with a degree in social work and worked in the social work field for 3 years before going on to seminary. In my free time, I really enjoy biking. I really like basketball, playing the banjo. And one of the things I really enjoy is spending time outside. And I just want to share a short story about that last joy. So I used to work up in the Boundary Waters at a place called Wilderness Canoe Base. Some of you may know it. And while I was there as a canoe guide, there is this water feature that I encountered. So if you don't understand the Boundary Waters, all you need to know is it's this really beautiful, pristine place. There's all of this land that's pretty much untouched. And the only people who are allowed to come in are people who are canoeing or kayaking. And so there's just these wide open lakes and all of these big trees sprouting out of essentially rocks. It's a really amazing place. And as you navigate around that place, you discover this place called the Riffle. And it's this little patch, probably about 15 feet wide or so, between two lakes. And so there's one lake that's higher up and one lake that's a little lower. And so the Riffle is just pouring water into this lower lake. And it's super fun when you're going down because you're just like shot through into this lower lake. But it's a lot harder when you're trying to go back up the Riffle. And I remember the first time I tried to go up the Riffle as a camper, I was like, all right, we're just going to do this. I'm just going to paddle super hard. We'll make it through. And so I was like paddling. And I'm like probably 15 years old at this point, but still not a lot of upper body strength. So I'm struggling as I'm trying to go up this Riffle. And I'm not very good at canoeing. And so I'm paddling. And the canoe is starting to tip side to side. And if you've been in a canoe, you kind of know that anxious feeling when the canoe starts to tip side to side and you're thinking like, wow, I'm about to be like really cold and all my stuff is going to be wet and I don't know what's going to happen next. And there's water kind of coming over a little bit on both sides. The water was really high that year. And so paddling. And I look over to the side. I'm thinking, all right, I must be almost done. And I realize we're not making any progress. In fact, like as I'm paddling as hard as I can, we're like slowly getting pushed backwards. I was just like, okay, I give up. This is too much. I can't do this anymore. And so I gave up. I was in the bow. And then the person in the stern obviously also gave it up and kind of got shot down the Riffle. I was feeling really overwhelmed in that moment. In this series, we're talking about looking at ourselves and looking at our reactions to things. And the idea of the inner selfie, if you're not familiar with it, is basically the idea to take a picture of yourself, of your emotional response to the world outside of you. And this is important because if we don't understand what's going on inside of us, we don't really understand how we're interacting in the world. We start to get like snippy over little things, or we start to get angry at people when we really shouldn't be angry at them. And life is too short to be constantly defeated or to be at war with everybody in your life. So we take inner selfies because we can't afford to go through life without knowing who we are inside. And when we're at peace with ourselves, we make the world around us better. And this is certainly a horizon. This is something that's under construction. I don't expect us to be at peace with ourselves all the time. That's impossible. But when we adopt practices, things like doing meditation, doing breathing, doing yoga. When we adopt practices like that, we're able to take inner selfies and we're able to have a better life, both for us and for the people that we love around us. A part of this is understanding our response to stress. And I would say there's three responses to stress. There's flooded, there's forcing, and there's flowing. And so in that Riffle, that moment when I'm getting pushed back in my canoe, I felt flooded. I felt totally overwhelmed. There's no escape. This is too much. I can't do this. I give up. That is the first response we have to feeling flooded. You want to escape. You want to get out of this situation. And this can manifest itself in really bad ways, in drug abuse and alcoholism and hurting others or hurting yourself. Those are all ways to escape from situations where you feel flooded. But it can also be more benign when you're working on something and you have to respond to an email or a text or something like that, and you just kind of control T Facebook. And you just, oh, maybe I'll deal with that a little later. Let me just escape for now. The other common reaction is despair. So these are the two reactions we have to feeling flooded. It's escape and despair. Usually you want to escape while you're in the flooded situation, and you feel despair when you're outside of it. So while I was paddling up and I realized I wasn't making any progress in the riffle, I felt flooded and I wanted to escape, so I just put my paddle down and let myself escape. And then when I was outside the riffle looking at it, I felt despair, thinking, I don't think I'm going to be able to make my way back up this. There's a really good example of fear that's written by a rapper named Kendrick Lamar, and I'm going to pull up the lyrics here. He has this verse about despair, and I'll just read it for you. I'll probably die from one of these bats and blue badges, body slamming on back, black and white paint, my bones snapping. Or maybe die from panic, or die from being too lax, or die from waiting on it, die because I'm moving too fast. So, for those of you that aren't familiar with Kendrick Lamar's backstory, he's a rapper right now, he's 29 years old, and this verse is written from his perspective as a 17-year-old growing up in Compton in the 90s, and he's seen people around him die. He's seen a lot of people around him just be crushed by life, by the racism and by the poverty that's in his neighborhood. And his riffle is this racism and poverty that's really crushing him. He sees it and he feels despair. He thinks, I'm probably going to die, because that's what you do when you're 17. And the hard part is that this despair, this response to feeling flooded, doesn't always go away when your situation changes. See, Kendrick actually is a success story, if you want to call it that, because he graduates from high school and then starts rapping, and he becomes a very successful rapper, but this doesn't change his feeling flooded. This doesn't change the poverty and racism that he sees. And so in the next verse, he's writing as his 27-year-old self, and he says, the shock value of my success puts bolts in me. All this money, is God playing a joke on me? Is it for the moment, and will he see me as Job, take it from me and leave me worse than I was before? And he's seen all of this racism and poverty that's surrounding him still. Even though he's made millions of dollars, even though he's a successful rapper, he knows that he still has to encounter racism every single day. And he's feeling despair about that. And he thinks, this could all go away. And I bring this second verse up because there's a man that Kendrick mentions in this verse, and the man is Job. Some of you might know who Job is, some of you might not, it's totally fine. He's a character in the Old Testament, has a whole book written about him, you can read about it sometime. The long story short is Job is a very successful person who lives a good life, and then he has everything taken from him. And it's really hard for Job because in the Old Testament, and in particular in this book of Job, he has this idea of righteousness, that good things happen to good people and bad things happen to bad people. And if you're good, good things will happen to you. And Job has this idea of righteousness, and he knows he's a righteous person, and yet all of his stuff is taken from him. His children die and he loses all of his money, and he can't quite figure out what's going on. And so he feels that flooded, he feels that despair, and he says, why did I not perish at birth, come forth from the womb and die? Job sees his riffle and he says, I can't do it. This is too much. I wish that I was not born. And I want to say, when we're in these moments where we feel flooded, it's healthy to express despair. It's okay to do that, even if it's just for yourself for a moment, just saying, I don't think I can do this. It's healthy to let that emotion flow through and just let it have a place. There's a negotiating expert named William Ury, and he has a practice that I want to talk about because it's really good for moments when you're feeling flooded, and it's called going to the balcony. And It's the idea that when you're in a flooded situation, when you're feeling flooded, it's impossible for you to get a sense of where you're at. And it's impossible for you to really have empathy for yourself because you're just so wrapped up in this. And the idea of going to the balcony is you just take a step back and you try and look at your situation and just think, okay, how would I be feeling if I was in this situation? What makes sense? Should I really be getting angry about this, or is this something that I can just let go? And so I want to practice this right now. We'll pull up the Menti slide. And I want you to respond. When I'm flooded, I feel like I'm blank. So go to menti.com and use that code that's up there. It's also on your Sunday paper toward the bottom, right here. So yeah, just go to menti.com on your smartphones and then enter that code and it'll take you there. Or do it on somebody else's smartphone. And just respond, when I feel flooded, I feel like I'm, or flooded reminds me of, whatever. And there'll be a word cloud that comes up. Yeah, that sense of overwhelmed, of drowning, of being a failure. That's definitely how we feel when we're flooded. That's definitely the emotional response that we get. So the second time that I tried going up the riffle, the second time I was very determined, I changed my mindset. I thought, okay, this is hard, but we can make it through. I don't like this riffle, but I can bash my way through the center of it. So I was in the bow, I made the person who was duffing paddle, and then the person in the stern was also paddling, so we're going and we go from maybe like 30 feet back and we're just like bam, 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 and we're like angry and smashing our way through this thing and we're slowly coming up it and making it and making it, and I look to the side and we're slowly making progress, and then finally it starts getting easier and we make it up and we make it through and we push through. And I was like, yeah, we did it. And then we had to rest for like 15 minutes because we were super tired. You know this feeling of flooded, and I'm guessing you also know the feeling of forcing. When you're in situations that you don't really like, when you're in a job or a relationship that's really stressful, but you think, I don't like this, but I can force my way through it. Yeah. And this is the majority of the book of Job, probably chapters 4 through 37, and there's like 42 or 43 chapters. It's the vast majority of Job is Job forcing, because he doesn't understand what's going on. And Job says, I hold fast to my righteousness. I will not let it go. My heart does not reproach me for any of my days. And he's still struggling with this idea of righteousness, that good things happen to good people and bad things happen to bad people. And he sees himself as a good person, but bad things are happening to him. So that's his riffle. That's the thing he's struggling through. And he's trying to just force his way through it by arguing with anyone who will listen, arguing with his friends, arguing with God, and he starts calling on God and says, why won't you answer me? Talk to me. I have a good case here. And the goofy part, the part that doesn't happen too often, is that God actually comes and talks to Job. And he comes, and it says he comes and speaks out of the whirlwind, so I'll let you use your imagination for that. But he comes and he says, who is this that speaks ignorantly? Buck up. I will question you, and you tell me. The language is a little more colorful than that, but I'll let you use your imagination. And so God talks for a little bit about the beauty of nature, and then Job is given a response. Job is given a chance to respond, and he says, I am nothing compared to you, so I won't talk anymore. I lay my hand on my mouth. And it's important to note that Job isn't conceding his point. He's not saying, I'm a bad person. What Job is saying is, whatever, you're God, I'm not going to argue with you anymore. I'm still right, though. He still thinks he doesn't deserve those bad things, but his mind has not changed. And that's because when you're in this forcing mindset, it's really hard to change your mind. You're seeing the opponent, you're seeing the riffle, or maybe an ideology as an enemy. You're seeing it as a situation where I have nothing to learn from this. And we start to see these encounters, these stressful moments, as either wins or losses. Either I beat the riffle or the riffle beat me. And that is the case sometimes, but I don't think we're always in this zero-sum game. We're not in this moment where we can't learn anything from the opposition or whatever this other stressor is. There's this Navy SEAL that I follow on Twitter, and he's kind of a meathead. His name is Jocko Willink, and he's all about like self-determination and then like America first, and he's got some good leadership principles, so I follow him for that, and then just kind of whatever about the other like rah-rah sis-kumbah stuff that he posts. And so somebody tweeted at him and was like, what would you do in North Korea? And I was thinking, all right, Jocko is a Navy SEAL, served as a Navy SEAL for 20 years or so, trained Navy SEALs. I know what he's going to do. He's going to say, all right, we just carpet bomb North Korea, and then we invade from both sides, and then we invade from the south with our South Korean allies. That's what Jocko's going to say, because that's the tactically best thing to do. But he didn't say that, and it honestly very much surprised me. What he said is, rather than spending money on bombs and invasion forces, what we should do is buy hundreds of thousands of iPhones. And we should pack these iPhones into little canisters. And then we should fly planes over North Korea and drop those iPhones just all over North Korea. And then blanket North Korea with free Wi-Fi. Yeah, that was my response. I was like, yeah, let's do that. That makes sense. Now, this isn't a perfect solution, obviously. There's lots of flaws in this plan, but he's not thinking with the forcing mindset. He's not thinking the North Korean people must be crushed and destroyed. He's thinking, is there another way that we can get through this, where we don't have to bomb anyone, where we don't have to go to war, where we don't have to sacrifice people? And I love this because you can brute force your way up the riffle. You can go to war with North Korea, and you can fight them, but you don't learn from that. Just because you can smash your way up the riffle, that doesn't make you good at canoeing. It just makes you strong. And so I want to practice going to the balcony for a moment here when we're talking about forcing. And the question is, when I'm forcing, I feel like I'm blank. You can tell who the optimists are because they answer winning. They see themselves in a conflict and they think, I'm winning right now, right? That's me. But you're really just fighting. And oftentimes you're not really winning. You're just in that conflict with that other person. When I saw my friend Whitney go up the riffle, I was expecting her to just go up in the same way that I went up. She's a beast, so I just figured she'd just like get going and just kind of smash her way right through the center. But that's not what she ended up doing. Instead, she ended up like taking maybe 15 paddle strokes, and she just kind of paddled up and then like went in and then went out. And I was watching her from like way back here, and I was just like, how did she do that? That's cheating. It's supposed to be hard. It was beautiful. Like, she had totally figured out this riffle in a way that I had never understood before. And I tracked her down later, and I was like, Whitney, tell me how you did that. And she said, well, if you just come in from the side and you just paddle like 4 or 5 hard strokes while you're in the riffle and then come back out, like, it's super easy. You don't actually have to rest afterwards. You don't have to worry about tipping your canoes or anything like that. And it helped me to realize that there's no rule that says every situation has to be hard. Flowing is not cheating. Wisdom isn't cheating. We like to think it is sometimes when we see other people do things that are super smart and we didn't think of it first. We think that person is cheating, but they're not cheating. They just thought about it a little more than you did. Like, I think of our attitude towards nutrition as this. We often get it in a forcing mindset. We think, I just got to eat this raw cabbage. I just got to take these broccoli stalks, and I'm just going to cut them up real small and put them in a smoothie, and it's going to suck, but I'll drink it. It's okay. And we get this like forcing mindset of, I hate vegetables, but I got to eat them. And it doesn't have to be that way. It really doesn't. Like, I remember the first time I had Brussels sprouts, and I actually enjoyed them. Because, yeah, if you cook them in oil with salt, with like a little bit of sea salt on them, they actually taste really good. And I was like, wow, I like eating vegetables. This doesn't have to be a conflict. It totally changed me from a forcing mindset to vegetables to a flowing mindset with vegetables. And you can also do this with exercise. We get this idea that exercise has to be this hard thing, that it has to be like 45 minutes running on a treadmill while people are looking at you and you're like self-conscious and like Fox News is blaring on the TV. And you're like, all right, whatever, I'll just like close my eyes and keep my head down and keep running. And then you're like in the shower and like people are getting close to you and you're kind of like, oh, this is weird. I don't like exercise, but I have to do it. But it doesn't have to be that way. The flowing mindset towards exercise is maybe I'll just take a walk with a loved one or go on a bike ride, or maybe I can play a sport that I love. Exercise doesn't have to be painful and hard. And I say that because we have enough hard stuff to go through. Between death and loss and pain and regret, we have a lot of hard things in our lives. And oftentimes, if we're able to get out of this forcing mindset, we can do things the easy way, the wise way. And we see this easier way, this change in mindset in Job's story. Because the second time that God talks, Job responds very differently. He says, I understand now, so I will change my mind about righteousness. Job's riffle is this idea of righteousness that he has combined with his own view of himself. He sees good things happen to good people, and he is a good person and bad things are happening to him. So there's some confusion there about what's going on. And in that conversation, I believe God helps Job come to the balcony. And God helps Job to see things in a different light. He helps Job to see that, yes, bad things do happen to good people. And just because you're a good person, that doesn't mean everything in your life is going to be good. There is beauty, and there is love, and there's also danger and loss in the world. Bad things happen to good people. And yet God loves you because God loves you because God loves you. And it's not anything that you do, it's just God's grace freely given to you. So you don't have to earn the love from God. It's something that is given to you. And so, how do we get to this? How do we get in this flowing mindset? And this is as much a question for me as it is for everyone here. I'm not alone in this struggle. And before we go any further, I want to make things clear. When I'm talking about a flowing mindset, when I'm talking about changing your mindset, I'm not saying people who are struggling with oppression or people who are struggling with mental illness just need to change their mindset. There's more to it than that. But I think maybe a part of it is changing mindset. And I think all of us can learn in this way. So flowing only requires two things. It requires gratitude and it requires hope. The first part of flowing is gratitude. Now y'all have probably heard of Chekhov's gun. Who's heard of Chekhov's gun? Okay. Oh wow, never mind. I shouldn't have brought it up. Sorry. So the idea of Chekhov's gun is if you put a gun in a play, it has to be used by somebody. And so this is Chekhov's apple, but that joke didn't work very well. So gratitude is what we're talking about. And I just want to take a moment and appreciate this apple. For this apple to exist, a giant glowing orb that's constantly blowing up 92.96 million miles away had to shoot light. And then that light had to go through the atmosphere of the Earth, and then it had to hit a leaf, and then that leaf had to convert that sunlight into energy, and then also take up nutrients from the ground and water. And then over the course of a few weeks, it was able to grow this apple. And then in order for this apple to get to me, it had to come from Washington. Yep. It had to come from Washington, be packed into a truck, and then taken over the Rocky Mountains, and then it was put in a store, and then we got it. And now we have this apple. And it's a wonderful thing. And I think it's so easy to just take things around us for granted, whether it's an apple or whether it's a phone or whether it's our clothing or the people around us. And this feeling of gratitude doesn't just apply to the things we have in our life. It's kind of easy to be grateful for things. It also applies to the people that we have in our life. When you express gratitude, you're better understanding the journey that thing has gone on, whether it's a thing or a person. And when you understand the journey, it helps you to love that person or that thing or that apple. Now, gratitude is a horizon. This is something we're always pushing for. This isn't some kind of easy target where you just need to like, oh, let me just turn on my gratitude. This is something that you need to practice. And so if we practice when it's easy, when we're stuck in traffic, or when we're waiting at a red light, or when our bike breaks, if you practice gratitude when it's easy, it becomes a lot easier when it's hard. So I want to do the second practice that I have. And that's hold on to something, whether it's like the pen that you got or a piece of clothing or someone around you. Just hold that thing and just think about it and think about the path that it took to be here and the journey that it had to come on in order to get to you. So just think about that for a minute. Now, gratitude is good. But I also want to acknowledge that there are times when gratitude is impossible. When you're feeling like you're really in a pit, when a loved one dies, or when you lose a job, or your housing situation changes, or stuff like that, it's really hard to appreciate those situations. And it's not maybe the right emotion to feel. So in those times of deep darkness, those times where we don't feel like gratitude is possible at all, we reach for hope. Those times when our schedule seems insurmountable, or when a romantic relationship ends, or when a loved one dies, hope doesn't say God will take care of it for you. It's not a Jesus take the wheel thing. Hope is saying God will take care of it with you. God will take care of it with you and through your community that surrounds you. And this hope is also a horizon. Like I said, I'm not expecting anyone to go instantly from flooded to automatically at peace. But this hope is something that we can practice. And we can practice it when times are easy so that it's easier when times are hard. And this is also this hope, this time when we're feeling flooded, that's a great place for a community and for people to come into your life and to be with you. And if you see someone around you struggling, for you to come into that person's life and be with them. And hope in those situations isn't say, well, God does everything for a reason, and or God just wanted another angel. God doesn't play games like that. Hope in those situations, when you're in despair or someone around you is in despair, hope is just being with that person. Because just being with them, just sitting with them and listening, that is telling them that there is hope for the future, that the past doesn't always have to define the future. So I want to go to the balcony one more time, bring back this practice once more. And we'll do the mentee thing again. When I'm flowing, I feel like I'm blank. Yeah, the word connected really resonates with me. Flowing is something that kind of happens when you're in community, when you're surrounded by people who love you and who can lift you up, who can help to show you hope and gratitude in times when that feels distant. So as we go forward, just know flowing is always a horizon. This is something we're always pushing for. No one is at flowing stage 100% of the time. But just know that the goal here is not to beat up on yourself until you're 100% flowing, or definitely don't beat up on other people until they're flowing. That's not how flowing works. You can't beat people into flowing. The goal here is just that this is something that we work towards, that this is a growth edge for us. And so know that as you're struggling to grow into more flowing situation, into that flowing mindset, know that you have the support and love of your community and that you also have the support and love of God.
Thanks for listening. If you found this podcast valuable, please pass it along to others. And we'd love to hear from you, too. You can email us at info@jacobs-well.net or message Jacobs Well Minneapolis on Facebook. We see what we do as a community really making a difference for people. Since you're listening, you probably have, too. If you'd like to make a donation to support this work, you can find ways at jacobs-well.net/give. Thanks. Listen again next week or join us in person Sunday mornings at 10:30.